WATD presents Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
If it's Monday night, it's got to be Monday Night Talk with Kevin Tachi. So thanks for having me on.
Kevin, good for you to hold back and let him tell his story.
Putting the South Shore spin on politics, current events, and pop culture.
You guys are the center of the universe today, at least the political universe.
I believe both of you are from the area. Marshfield guys, yes, no?
Correct, yeah.
That's right.
There's only one person not from Marshfield in this room right now. And it's you.
It's me. I'm the outcast.
Well, you've always been generous with the time. I appreciate it very much.
Well, I'm honored to be on your show tonight, Kevin, with that impressive lineup you have.
I believe our guest that we've been waiting for, Congressman Stephen Lynch.
Kevin, good to join you.
The governor of the Commonwealth, Charlie Baker. You ready?
I got to tell you that it was really nice to hear Aerosmith on the intro there.
You're going
to
be the rock and roll governor?
I don't know about that, but
we have Mayor Joe Sullivan joining us. Sir, how are you?
Well, Kevin, very good to be with you again.
Dr. Drew Pinsky. Dr. Drew, are you there?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Mr. Ming Tsai, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, thanks, Kevin.
Massachusetts State Auditor Suzanne Bump. Hello, Auditor. How are you?
I am fine, and I'm delighted to be with you this evening.
And now, your host, Kevin Tachi.
Welcome to Monday Night Talk. Yes, my name is Kevin Tachi. And you're listening to this program not only on 95.9 FM, WATD in Marshfield, but also 1460 AM in Brockton. And we have a great show lined up for you. I actually have somewhat of an interesting way that we put the show together this week. The first half of the program, I will have a gentleman who is going to be not only a guest, but he's going to stick on his co-host hat. He's actually sitting here with me at this moment, Joe Rossi. You know Joe. Joe,
of course. How's it going, Kevin?
It's going pretty good. I thought it would give you an opportunity to talk a little bit of what's the latest with the National Flood Program. I hear you in the mornings. I hear you doing stuff regularly with the news department, the South Shore's Morning News. So we're gonna tap into that. We also have Brockton Mayor Bill Carpenter. So I thought you could sit in and talk about that a little bit.
Awesome.
Talk with him. And an interesting thing from what I understand is that you and I had a chance to watch the big fight this weekend. I'm kind of curious as to the mayor's take on the big fight, seeing that he's a Hall of Fame.
Hall of Fame ring announcer.
Ring announcer, only in Rhode Island. He'll tell you that. but he's a guy who's called both boxing matches and MMA matches for Jimmy Birchfield down in Rhode Island. He's also, anybody who remembers some of the boxing matches, usually like on ESPN, you'd see him in the background doing the ring announcing. So we'll tap into that and also talk with him about his campaign as we've been trying to get some of the candidates into the program in groups. Unfortunately, we couldn't get the mayor in to come in studio, so we thought we would optimize the time to at least chat with him by phone to talk a little bit about the campaign. Second hour, we get a couple of folks from some personalities from WATD, some of the WATD family. We'll start at 7 o'clock with Christine James. We can have a little bit of a conversation with the candidates. A couple of candidates running for selectmen in Scituate, Keith Wallow and Karen Canfield, will be here, and Christine and I will chat with them about their campaigns for office and some of the issues, and then. Then we're going to, or I'm going to, put my dancing shoes on and sit down and chat with Rob Hakala, Sandra Wright, and Cheryl Bartlett. Now, Sandra Wright is a Plymouth County Commissioner. Cheryl Bartlett is the former Commissioner of the Mass Department of Public Health. And, of course, Rob Hakala, you know him as the host and executive producer of the South Shore's Morning News. You hear him every weekday here on this radio program, radio station. And we're going to talk a little bit about Dancing with the Dignitaries. Now, who's going to sit in with me on that? None other than the Afternoon Drive host, Kathy D. Kathy D will join me as I was inspired by their segment. What do you think of that, Joe? How come you weren't asked to do a little dancing for a good cause?
Oh, believe me, nobody wants to see me out there dancing.
Yeah, I definitely agree. But I thought I would ask Kathy to be a kind of a co-producer, co-host of this segment, because she's a big fan of Dancing with the Stars and this Dancing with the Dignitaries. This is actually going to be a fundraiser, a special fundraiser with the Plymouth County Suicide Prevention Coalition, who is actually going to be teaming up with the Fred Astaire Dance Studios of Plymouth. This will be all taking place on September 16th. So we got a great show lined up.
Wow. Smash full of stuff.
Yes. Absolutely. And when we come back from traffic, Joe, we'll start off with you. We'll chat with you. How's that
sound? Sweet.
Hey, it's Jeff from Brennan Smoke Shop. Message me directly on Brennan Smoke Shop's Facebook page.
This guy drives me nuts. He's so annoying. I'm going to message him on Facebook right now.
Hey, it's Jeff from Facebook.
Oh.
Adam, were you just going to message me on Facebook for no good reason? Huh?
How are you doing this?
Adam, everyone knows I'm everywhere all at once. I'm in your car. I'm on your phone. I'm on your computer. With the power of radio broadcasting, I'm everywhere. You can't hide from me. I'm Jeff from Brennan's Smoke Shop.
Get out of my radio. Stop it, Jeffrey. Get out of my phone. Help.
Adam, wake up.
I won't message anymore.
Wake up.
Please, stop. Just go away.
Wake up.
Oh, I was having a nightmare.
It was only a dream. Everything's going to be fine.
No, it's not. It's Jeff from Brennan's Smoke Shop.
It's a nightmare.
Hey, it's Jeff from Brennan's Smoke Shop. Message me directly on Brennan's Smoke Shop's Facebook page.
Welcome back to Monday Night Talk. Don't just listen, say something. Call 781-837-4900. And now, more Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
And we return here on Monday Night Talk to speak with, Joe right now is putting on his guest hat, as he'll put that co-host hat back on when we speak with the Brockton Mayor, Bill Carpenter. But Joe, I try to have you on every so often, not just as a co-host, but also to educate folks. Well, I know that you do small little vignettes during the morning news, during the social's morning news, and kind of get people up to date, whether you're here or traveling out to a conference somewhere in and around the country.
Yes.
Gives you an opportunity to have a little bit more conversation as to where things stand. And then also we could share it as a podcast, as we do.
Sure.
Worldwide, 959watd.com, and scroll down and click on Monday Night Talk. You'll find all of our podcasts, including this one, the entire show, which Joe kicks off the program. What's the latest? I know that some of the things that I've been hearing in the past couple of weeks you talk about when you do an update for the news department is that the clock is ticking and that we are waiting for some kind of an action in regards to the National Flood Program. Where are things standing today, August 28th, about a month out from hopefully some action that will be taken by Congress?
That's right. So in a couple days, it'll be August 30th, and on September 30th, the program expires. One of the, you know, there's been a lot of action and a lot of not action. So it's interesting. We saw a lot of buildup leading up to the recess that Congress took earlier in the month. And then right before that recess, Congress dropped all plans to move forward any flood legislation before that recess. There was a lot of anticipation from both the House and the Senate that they would do that. So where we stand right now is a holding pattern. Now, I do know that over this recess, there have been negotiations behind the scenes and kind of some stage setting for when they come back in about a week or so, which they will only have 12 legislative days to pass something before the program expires. Now, what I think the biggest kind of wrench, in a good way, in the whole process was Hurricane Harvey that we just saw hit the Texas coast. Congressman, chair of the House Financial Services, Hensarling, is from Texas. And what I think you'll see is that this flood, literally both the flood of the rain and the flood of claims that will come through the National Flood Insurance Program, in the timing of all this, will certainly force Congress into reauthorizing the program. So I'm more certain now than I've ever been that even if it's not a full reauthorization, we will get some sort of short-term extension. We've heard 30 days, we've heard 60 days. Either way, it'll give us some more time to put together a comprehensive reauthorization package.
Now, it's funny you mention that because in any of the literature, any of the legislation, when we look at this, the Hurricane Harvey, which, you know, has been churning all weekend down in Texas, they're calling this, or they've called this, a 500-year storm. Is there going to have to be an amendment or an addendum to anything that is written for, you know, acts of God or anything of such magnitude. Is it a matter? It's going to be a blanket type of thing with specialized areas.
Well, you know, it's interesting. Let's take a look at Sandy. You know, what Congress did during that is they did a congressional appropriation, and it was actually in that fiscal year, it was the second largest fiscal appropriation of $50 billion. The only larger one in the budget was the defense budget. So, but that money didn't go to flood victims necessarily that were getting flood insurance payouts from the flood program. That was disaster assistance. It was to rebuild certain infrastructure, and then it was earmarked to go all over the country at the end of the day. So, you know, what I've said and been quoted by in local papers and in national publications has basically been, we are going to pay for these disasters going forward in one of two ways. We're either going to spend the money now before disasters happen to fix what's broken, or we're going to spend these large appropriations after disasters through taxpayer funds to fix it after it's broken. You know, I'd like to think that the reauthorization that's been proposed by several senators and some of the pieces in the House look to take the money that exists now and fix things before they're broken so that we don't have to spend as much money afterwards. So there's been a lot of talk through the new FEMA head that was appointed by the Trump administration, Brock Long, to actually reduce the federal government's role in disaster assistance. I'm somewhat agreeable to that because I think that there needs to be an emphasis on the purchase of flood insurance. You know, people shy away right now because of the complications and the bad reputation that the flood insurance program gets. One of the big things that all the pieces of legislation propose in both the House and the Senate is to allow a private market to start to enter in a way that would be competitive, and that you would be able to really start to compare the national flood program with some of these private programs and really get some good coverage. I think that's the future. I don't think it's going to ever go away, the federal program, nor do I think it should. But I think we're going to see in the coming legislative reforms and reauthorizations that you'll have more of a marketplace to choose from when you look for flood insurance.
And I just want to make sure that I let folks know, Joe, not only being a worthy co-host on this program from time to time and a car expert, but he's also the chair of the Marshfield Citizens Coastal Coalition. And specializes in this, and is somebody who actually works in the insurance industry in helping folks be able to attain and understand their coverage. And when these significant changes come about, he and his group have been very proactive in putting together conferences and events where folks can come and get information. Are you hoping to have something like that in the coming weeks and months?
You know, what's funny is we're working on several big events. We actually just got off the phone this past week with a group that's looking to come up here next year to host a week-long series of seminars that will talk about how to elevate your home. I think that's a huge benefit because with changing maps and changing insurance, elevation of properties is going to become a huge thing that we see across all of our region. There are some areas of the country where communities have 80% of their homes elevated. So we certainly are close to that, and we need to continue that effort. Later this year, we hope to put on a seminar that will talk about the legislative changes should they happen. You know, one of the big things we've been at kind of specialists in is outreach and education. That's the main part of our mission at the coalition. So we're hoping to get out there into the communities across the state, across the country, as we have in the past, and really talk about the legislative changes that will hopefully be passed and what the implications of those changes will be.
What has your group done in regards to lobbying? I know that there's a lot of work that's been done with local officials, you know, whether it was State Senator Bob Hedlund, who's now the mayor of Weymouth. Patrick O'Connor, I believe, is somewhat very much involved in this. State Rep Jim Cantwell,
yep,
just
absolutely.
To name a few. And I know that anytime that they have taken trips down to the nation's capital. They have tried to bend the ear of the folks who represent us,
sure.
The legislative delegation that is down there. What is the group doing, though, in regards to any kind of lobbying, whether it's on the state level or if it's down at the nation's capital?
Earlier this year, with the coordination of, you mentioned Representative Jim Cantwell's office, you know, we were able to coordinate a meeting with our federal delegation's representatives, their offices, to talk about and kind of push for certain provisions in the bills. We have another meeting like that planned for September, potentially. Okay. That's in the works. But really, what the biggest thing we're doing is we're networking with, you know, one of the things we're really proud of is the extremely strong and deep network of groups and professionals from all across the country that we have access to. I sit on a few national boards. We are in conference calls on a monthly basis with some national groups. And we're really working together because that's the only way that you're going to be able to form a national coalition strong enough to push for some of these pieces. For the most part, as a national kind of network that's come together in the places that we are, we find a lot of commonality. So we're working on those things, and we've been successful already in two areas. We have removed some harmful provisions and are negotiating some of the other ones that we'll end up having to kind of eat, but they're not going to be as bad as we originally thought they were going to be. So that's what we're doing actively, and of course, we're constantly sending out emails and newsletters so that our constituents, the people we talk to on a daily basis, are involved as well to make sure they're echoing our calls.
Joe, if folks want to find out more information as to things change, as is more updates, as hopefully Congress gets together and decides whether they want to do a 30-day or 60-day extension to the national program, how can they find out more information?
September is going to be an extremely busy month, and I predict that October may be as well. So if people want to get involved, they go to our website, marshfieldcoastalcoalition.org. Email me at info@marshfieldcoastalcoalition.org. And make sure when you go to that, email us or go to our website, you join our email list. People might get annoyed we're sending so many emails out, but we don't want to have what happened in 2012, where the flood legislation and reforms slipped right under our radar, and then we dealt with the implications later. So stay informed and pay attention. We have boots on the ground, literally in Congress, and so we're going to make sure that this time we get it right.
All right. Don't go anywhere, Joe. Stay right where you are. We are going to step aside just for a couple of moments, but when we come back, we will speak with Brockton Mayor Bill Carpenter. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Monday Night Talk.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
McGuigan's Pub in downtown Whitman is a great place to unwind any night of the week. Stop in for Singo on Monday night. There's the always popular Irish Sessions every Tuesday night, half-price pizza every Wednesday night, and Friday and Saturday nights feature the best in live entertainment. Catch your favorite game on McGuigan's 8 big flat screens and enjoy a pint at their beautiful 54-foot mahogany bar. Whether you're a regular or coming in for the first time, you're always a friend of McGuigan's Pub, 546 Washington Street, Whitman Center.
Download previous episodes of Monday Night Talk and listen to them anywhere. Check out 959watd.com/Monday Night Talk. And now, more Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
Welcome back to Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 FM, WATD in Marshfield, also 1460 AM in Brockton. Joe, you could take off the host hat. And you can put on your, actually take off your hat as a guest and put on your co-host hat. We actually have somebody who's actually going to be kind of doubling as well, an individual who is not only a former ring announcer, Hall of Fame ring announcer, but he's also...
Only in the state of Rhode Island.
Only in the state of Rhode Island. That is, of course, Joe, that is the voice.
I don't believe that's recognized in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, but over the Rhode Island border, they thought I was okay.
All right, and of course, that voice, Joe, is
is the Mayor of Brockton, Mayor Bill Carpenter.
Mayor, welcome back to Monday Night Talk, sir.
Good evening, Kevin. Good evening, Joe. Great to be back with you guys.
You know what's ironic? Now, we're going to talk a little bit, as we talked about in the opening, we talk a little with the mayor about his re-election for a third term coming up as the city preliminaries are just around the corner. But we, the three of us, had a chance to witness a historical event this weekend. Myself, I'm a boxing fan, somebody who hails from Brockton, folks, Rocky Marciano, 49-0, the big fight with Mayweather-McGregor. Mayor, I believe that you had a chance to watch it this weekend as well?
Well, you had to if you're from Brockton, because obviously Mayweather with a win was going to be 50-0 and be an undefeated a world champion with 50 wins. And, you know, for Brocktonians in the history and the legacy of Rocky Marciano as the only undefeated heavyweight champ in history and retiring with a record of 49-0, there was some significance, although I don't think in any way, I'm not even sure that the fight Saturday night should qualify as the 50th professional boxing win of his career, but if it does, I am sure that it does not take away from Marciano's history and legacy in the sport. It's like trying to compare, you know, Babe Ruth and Mark McGwire. They're just completely different eras. In, you know, back in the 50s, there was only one world champion. There was only half a dozen weight classes, and champs fought everybody. And this world of boxing that we're in today with the, you know, four or five rating organizations and alphabet soup organizations and 19 different weight classes. And, sure, you know, listen, I'm not a big Mayweather fan, but there's no doubting the fact that at this moment in time, he's the best boxer alive. And I think that no matter how tough McGregor was, there is, that he was going to, in his pro debut in boxing, get into a ring and beat the best boxer on the planet today, even at the age of 40. I never really thought McGregor could win the fight, and he surprised me by probably doing better earlier than I thought he would, although I still don't know how much was him and how much, you know, Mayweather didn't throw a lot of punches in those first three rounds. And I sure felt like in the early part of the fight that he might have been carrying McGregor a little bit, and he was just being real careful. And, you know, clearly Mayweather had a strategy to let McGregor punch himself out, and that's exactly what he did. And, you know, by the time we got to the 10th round, you know, McGregor had nothing left, and Mayweather was coming on. And I guess at the end of the night, it was more entertaining than I thought it would be, only because I really expected a really bad fight. But, you know, it was more entertaining. I'm still not sure it was worth $100.
I'll have to ask you this. I'll say two things. You're talking about the undefeated streak. I would think that Julio Cesar Chavez would want to say something, seeing that I think before he lost his first fight, he went, 87-0?
Something like that, yeah. There have been a lot of great fighters with long unbeaten strings. And, you know, what made Rocky different is that he was the undisputed heavyweight champion of the world,
right,
when that really meant something. And when you had to be the heavyweight champ of the world, there was one title, and you had to fight everybody. And, you know, clearly, I'm not impartial on this one, being from Brockton. The one thing, and again, I'm not a huge Mayweather guy, but Mayweather was actually very deferential to the Marciano legacy and made a couple really nice comments about the former heavyweight champ in his post-fight interviews. So I actually did appreciate that. I'll give you an interesting sidelight, Kevin. We're reaching out to Mayweather's people. We're going to try to get him to make a trip to Brockton. Because the nature of his comments after the fight, he clearly was looking to not tarnish Rocky's legacy. And, you know, we seem to think that, and he may really be retired this time, you know, he might enjoy the opportunity to come see the statue and meet the Marciano family and kind of connect his own legacy with Marciano's legacy. So we're going to try that, and we'll see what happens. You know, it was a few years back, You know, no one thought Jose Suleiman would come visit us in Brockton, and he did, and we ended up getting that beautiful Rocky statue. So we're going to at least take a shot at trying to get Mayweather to visit us here in Brockton.
Hey, if Don King can come and Larry Holmes can come and visit,
that's right.
I think
well,
that
and you remember
can.
Holmes and all the controversy he had in his career when sure. he made that, you know, comment when he was heavyweight champ that, you know, Rocky couldn't carry his jock strap. And, you know, Holmes came here, and you were out, Kevin. I mean, he was here for 2 days,
yeah.
and he couldn't say enough great things about how much he respected Rocky and how much he regretted the comment that he had made. And, you know, maybe Mayweather wants an opportunity to do a little bit of that also.
Joe?
Mayor, you know, this was, Kevin and I were talking earlier off air about how this is really the first time MMA and boxing have come together. And what do you see this as, seeing that you've been involved in both? How do you see this playing out in the future? Is this the beginning, do you think, of something bigger, or do you think this was one of those more one-off type of things?
Yeah, I think this was a pretty unique event. I guess it reminds us, I mean, McGregor made 10 times as much in this fight as he has in the rest of his career.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the money was certainly here. I don't think McGregor has to fight anymore either. And if I made as much as he made last night, I don't think I would. Yeah, it's interesting. You know, this it's almost a generational thing. So for folks that don't know, I worked over 20 years as a professional boxing ring announcer. But in the last 7 or 8 years, before I stepped aside to become mayor, I did both and have announced a lot of MMA fight cards all over New England, primarily at the casinos. And they are two different sports, and it's generational. I mean, I'm a guy who's 60 who grew up as a boxing guy and still love boxing to this day. And I enjoy MMA, but I love boxing. My sons were in their 20s and 30s. They're all UFC fans, and they'll watch a boxing match with me, but they'd much rather watch the UFC. So, I mean, I think it's somewhat generational. It's cultural. Certainly in the Latino communities, boxing is still huge, and that's usually where the biggest pay-per-view numbers come from nowadays in boxing. But they are two different sports. But I will say this. I do believe if that fight was held in the parking lot, McGregor would kill him. But I just think that, you know, all these rules and the ring and the gloves and all of that serve to Mayweather's advantage. And, you know, McGregor showed he's a tough guy.
Yep.
I thought, you know, didn't embarrass himself, but, you know, he ran out of gas, and, you know, I think that was Mayweather's strategy all along. Just play with him for a few rounds, wait for him to get tired, then go after him. And I think the fight went exactly the way Mayweather would have scripted it.
Again, we're speaking with Brockton Mayor Bill Carpenter, chatting a little bit about this weekend's big fight between Mayweather and McGregor.
I also remember when I said I'd never pay $40 for a pay-per-view fight and paid $100 last night, so there you go.
Well, and it's funny, you had mentioned at the onset of this conversation about that maybe Mayweather might have carried him for a bit. Well, we think back to when Mike Tyson kind of made the pay-per-views what they were, but people would walk away disappointed because he would clobber his opponents within, you know, the first couple of, you know, at least until he went up against Buster Douglas, who took him out in Tokyo.
Well, you got to remember, Kevin, that back in, I want to say it was 97, but somewhere around there, I was ringside at the MGM Grand for Tyson McNeely, and, you know, fight that at that time was the biggest moneymaker of all time, I think, and that fight lasted 68 seconds.
Right.
So that's the gamble with pay-per-view. You better watch the undercard to make sure you get your money's worth.
Yeah,
right. Absolutely. Well, yeah, talking changing directions here, talking a little bit about coming up in just a couple of weeks, we have a preliminary. I think your race is one of just a couple that will be on the ballot. Give me your thoughts going into hopefully you'll be on the card for November.
Well, the plan is for me to be Mayweather, not McGregor, I guess. That's what we're hoping for, anyhow. Pretty good segue, Kevin. There's not a huge difference probably between Brockton politics and MMA and professional boxing. So this is a different kind of race. September 19th is coming up as the primary. I think I've got 4 or 5 challengers. I lost track somewhere along the line. And, you know, this is our third campaign now with a 2-year term. And I think our approach is very different this time. I'm not running against those challenges. I don't even know who half of them are. But I think what we are running on is we're running on our record. We're running on what we think we've accomplished over our first 3.5 years. And, you know, what our vision is for the city going forward from here, and what are the things we're working on now, and where are we going, and where do we plan to take this city? And, you know, as I walk around the city, and I'm not taking anything for granted, Kevin, I was out yesterday afternoon knocking on doors on a Sunday afternoon. We're still, you know, we're putting up lawn signs. So, you know, I think it is a little different type of race for me now as a two-term incumbent. I think, you know, 4 years ago when we were the challenger, when you're the challenger, you're running on what you'd say that you would do if you had the opportunity. I think after 3.5 years in office, it's fair for the voters to say to me, what have you done? And why should we continue to keep you in that position? And so really, I think that's the case I'm looking to make to the voters between now and November 7th is, well, you know, here's some of the things we said we would do. Here's what we've done so far. Here's what we're working on. And here's how I see Brockton 5 or 10 years from now. And, you know, we believe the city is a better place than it was 3.5 years ago. And we believe the economy has turned around. We're bringing back our downtown. We've improved the quality of life here. We've invested in parks and playgrounds. We have diversified city government for the first time in the city's history. All communities are represented in employment, in boards and city boards and commissions, and I actually think that we've affected a lot of change in a pretty short period of time. 3.5 years, you know, in most cities I'd just be wrapping up my first term, not my second term. So we're proud of what we've done. We believe we have the city moving in the right direction, and that's the case we make to the voters.
I have to ask you, and that is how has the conversation changed this third time around as you are out there campaigning and knocking on doors? Is it still public safety? Is my street going to be paved? Is it still those conversations?
Or yeah, I don't think the basics change too much. I mean, I attend national mayor's conferences. I was just up in Burlington, Vermont a couple weeks ago for a group of mayors I belong to called the Mayor's Innovation Project. And we had about maybe 35 or so mayors, but from all over the country, Eugene, Oregon, Chapel Hill, North Carolina, just cities all over the country. And every time I'm in one of those forums, I'm reminded how similar, despite the differences. You know, we all have our little parochial issues, but amazingly how the most important issues are pretty universal in American cities. It's jobs, it's crime, it's education. I mean, people want to live in a safe and clean neighborhood. They want the kids to get a first-class education. They want to be able to make a good living to support their families and own their own home or own their own business. And I think those themes are pretty universal in any American city.
Joe?
Mayor, you know, one of the big topics, as we've been discussing here, is the safety and security of neighborhoods in the city in general. What are some, in the last few years, what are some of the big benchmarks that you've seen in the city in terms of decreased rate of crimes and murders? And I know there's been some significant successes for your administration in those areas.
Well, I think that I don't get hung up on the homicide statistics because I just don't think it's the most reliable statistic. Sometimes there's a little bit of luck involved. I think what we've tried to really look at is gun violence and gun-related incidents. And, you know, the statistics show that since 4 years ago, gun-related incidents in the city are down over 30%. So I think we have employed some effective strategies. We've continued to build up our police force. When I took office, we had 174 officers on the payroll. In October, when our next class goes into the academy, that will get us up to 200. When I ran 4 years ago, I said we needed to increase the police force by 50 officers, and I thought the realistic way to get there would be if we could increase 5 positions per year over a 10-year period. We could get this police force up to the type of staffing that would be comparable for other cities and be comparable with Department of Justice standards. And I think we're ahead of that pace. In 3.5 years, we're up 26 positions. And it's not cheap, and it comes with a cost, but I don't think we cannot afford to increase the police force. But it's more than just boots on the grounds. We've embrace technology with our police department. We've been installing video cameras in public spaces across the city for 3 years now, consistently putting up more and more cameras. We have invested in ShotSpotter gunshot detection technology. We've obtained AFIS online fingerprint technology that allows us to get fingerprint information now in minutes that used to take weeks, which has tremendously helped our detectives in our investigations. And I think perhaps one of the most important things is just philosophically, we have really committed and embraced the idea of multi-jurisdictional, multi-level investigations where we are constantly, always partnering with state law enforcement, county, federal, some of the surrounding communities, and so that we can, we know that on our own, we're never going to have enough resources, enough officers. However, if we share intelligence and share resources with our state, county, and federal law enforcement partners, we can get a lot more bang for the buck, be far more effective, and particularly targeting the city's most dangerous individuals. It's not public, but I mean, our police department is constantly identifying what we refer to as repeat violent offenders, individuals that have had multiple charges or convictions for violent crime, because we know that a large percentage of violent crime is committed by a very small percentage of the people here in the city. And at any given time, the vast majority of the gun violence can be attributed to about 40 or 50 people. And we are constantly gaining intelligence on those folks, identifying them, locking some up, identifying others as they come out, and really targeting those individuals, and then combining that intelligence with the state and federal law enforcement partners. And we share intelligence weekly, and sometimes more often with those other agencies, and we'll identify what we refer to as targets of mutual interest, that, you know, the state police may have some information on someone or may be looking at someone, and then we talk and find out we're also interested in that individual. Or at the state or federal level, they may help us with guns or drugs that are coming in and out of the city from other jurisdictions, and then we can get in joint investigations that way. So I think this idea of not trying to do it alone, really investing our effort and our resources towards strategic partnerships with our state, county, and federal law enforcement partners has paid off. And 2013 was the last year before I was mayor. We took over in January of 14, and this year we'll do almost three times as many search and entry warrants as were done in 2013, from 30-something to 80-something. And every single one of those search warrants usually represents several months of investigation to gather evidence, because we know we've got to reduce the flow of drugs on the streets. Mm. We know that guns and drugs are intertwined, and a very important piece of our strategy to reduce the gun violence is by going after drug dealers who all have guns.
Well, and it's interesting you bring up drugs. Now, we just have a couple of moments left here with you. But, you know, we look at how the drug situation has changed and the epidemic, and now police are having to deal with a new drug, or a drug that is more potentially lethal, and that is fentanyl or carfentanil, where, you know, if an officer or a paramedic comes in contact with somebody, or if it's in the air, it could, inebriate them, or it could hurt them as well.
So we've had to handle several drug-grade drug arrest situations as hazmat situations,
right?
Because if they see a substance, they're not 100% sure what it is, and it has certain characteristics,
right,
then we're going to err on the side of caution, and we're going to get the right folks with the right equipment in to contain it. And it's frightening. And it's probably the single biggest challenge we've faced over the last 3.5 years has been the opioid epidemic, mm-hmm, crisis, because you, as a mayor, you just look at, you know, what are those quality of life issues that impact, the challenges that impact your residents' lives on a daily basis. And so when we look at any American city like Brockton, homelessness, property crime, gun violence, prostitution, What's the common denominator? Drug addiction. People are stealing to support their drug habit. Mm. Drug dealers carry guns. A large percentage of the gun violence is often connected to a drug transaction somehow. Drug deal gone bad, drug deal ripped off, someone with another problem with someone else. But you look at all of these challenges that cities face, and what is the overwhelming common denominator today? And unfortunately, it's opioid addiction.
Yep.
So we know that if we're going to make progress in all of these areas, we've got to get our arms around the opiate addiction crisis. And I think Brockton has been a leader in that effort. I think we receive statewide and even now national recognition for our champion plan and some of the other things that we've instituted. And really, we've done exactly what we said we would do 4 years ago, Kevin. We said we were going to come at this thing from both sides, supply and demand, and that we were going to be compassionately helping as many people get into treatment as we could. We don't arrest people for simple possession. We haven't done that for a long time. In Brockton, when someone walks into the police station, says they have a drug problem, we plug them into the champion plan, and in most cases, we get that person into a treatment facility the same day, because we know locking them up in a jail cell isn't going to change anything. But at the same token, we have increased our commitment to interrupting the supply of drugs onto the streets of the city, too. And if you're dealing and trafficking in drugs, you're in our eyesights, and we are coming after you, and we are arresting as many drug dealers as we can, and we've driven many of them out of the city.
Mayor, we have enough time for one more question. Again, we're talking to Brockton Mayor Bill Carpenter, talking a little bit about his re-election campaign, hopefully for a third term. Joe, I'll let you ask the last question.
Sure. Just quickly, Mayor, talk a little bit about, funding for education and what the city's doing in regards to that.
Right. We know that the last 2 years there's been what has been put forth by the school department. We've seen deficits, but you've been able to kind of pare that down. What do we do moving forward?
Well, I think this is an area where probably the folks in most of your listening audience and I would disagree. We believe that the state is not fulfilling its commitment as it's required to under the law to properly fund public education in poor gateway cities like Brockton. And, we have a disproportionate number of low-income students. They are more expensive to educate. We have a disproportionate percentage of special ed kids. They are more expensive to educate. We have a disproportionate number of English language learners. Over one-third of our students are not yet considered proficient in the English language. I don't think that's quite how I remember it in Marshfield growing up.
Right.
So, we take on large challenges. We take on the most challenging children to educate and make sure that they're getting the same opportunities that every child growing up in this Commonwealth deserves to have. Yet, in recent years, with changes to the Chapter 70 funding formula, we believe that we're not being fairly compensated for those costs. We believe that the state Supreme Court back in the 90s made it clear that whether a child was in an affluent community or a poor community, they should be receiving the same quality public education. And in fact, the legislature a couple of years ago commissioned a Chapter 70 foundation formula study that found all the things that I just said. And so their own commission has documented the things that we're talking about, yet for 3 years in a row, in essence, our Chapter 70 local aid to education in Brockton has been level funded, while our student population has gone up several hundred students, and on average across the Commonwealth, communities have received about a 2% a year increase in Chapter 70. So we feel it's not being handled equitably. We feel that children in a gateway city like Brockton are being hurt. We do think that this administration's philosophy on charter schools also unfairly hurts cities like Brockton. They're balancing the entire cost of charter schools on the backs of the school districts that can least afford it. So we've got our work cut out for us, and we've got to continue to advocate hard for our students here, at a time where there's so much division in the country. You know, Brockton truly is a welcoming city, and we have all kinds of folks from all different places and all different backgrounds and religions and economic status. But the one thing we know is that every child growing up in this country, this state, this city, deserves an equal opportunity to a first-class public school education. This, you know, America is the greatest country in the world, but the key to opportunity in this country is education, and every child deserves that education, and that's what we're fighting for here in the city of Brockton.
Mayor, if folks want to find out more about your campaign, how can they do that?
Well, don't read the newspaper. Just a joke. We're all over social media. Mayor Bill Carpenter on Facebook, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, website. We're in all those places. So just Google us and find us. But we're looking forward to the rest of the campaign, Kevin. And we're looking forward to between now and November 7th being able to speak to the voters in Brockton about what we've done so far in 3.5 years. Why we think the city is a better place to live in today than it was 3.5 years ago, and why we would like the opportunity to continue the work that we've begun. So, Joe, Kevin, thank you so much for having me back on a Monday Night Talk.
There he is, Brockton Mayor Bill Carpenter joining us, not only to talk a little bit about his sparring with candidates, but also talk a little bit about the big fight this past weekend. We'll step aside, and when we come back, the second hour of Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD, also 1460 AM in Brockton. Stay tuned.
The South Shore's breaking news, weather, and traffic station.
95.9 WATD FM Marshfield and 95.9 WATD.com.
Back in the 1950s, Grossman's in Braintree had sitting out in front of their lot a gigantic pile of intertwined wire cable. Neighborhood kids told one another it was an anti-submarine net used during World War II. Maybe the one at Pearl Harbor. Kids used to climb all over it. Very dangerous. Bill Buckley even took home a clip from it. He left it on his front porch and then forgot all about it. That was the summer of 1958. 40 years later, Bill was mowing his parents' lawn, a favor he enjoyed. Suddenly, the mower blade struck that clip and sent it smashing through his own windshield. When he picked it up from the front seat, he had no clue.
I'm Tiny of Tiny & Sons Glass. We come to your work or home, and we fix your windshield. Your insurance covers it. We're Tiny & Sons. My boys do a good job. 1-888-64-TINIES. Just call.
My dad did a great job.
McGuigan's Pub in downtown Whitman is a great place to unwind any night of the week. Stop in for Singo on Monday night. There's the always popular Irish Sessions every Tuesday night, half-price pizza every Wednesday night, and Friday and Saturday nights feature the best in live entertainment. Catch your favorite game on McGuigan's 8 big flat screens and enjoy a pint at their beautiful 54-foot mahogany bar. Whether you're a regular or coming in for the first time, you're always a friend of McGuigan's Pub, 546 Washington Street, Whitman Center.
Monday Night Talk continues all week long. Go to 95.9WATD.com/Monday Night Talk and keep in touch on Facebook and Twitter. This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
Welcome back to Monday Night Talk. This is the second hour of Monday Night Talk heard here on 95.9WATD in Marshfield, 1460 AM in Brockton. And this hour is going to be a special hour, actually the first half of this. I'll be doing a little bit of a tag team with Christine James, co-producing this segment with folks who are running for Selectman in Scituate. What do we got on tap, Christine?
Well, thanks, Kevin, and I'm so glad we were able to do this. This is a little bit of a different approach that we're going to be taking. Not a formal forum. These are the two candidates that are running for the Scituate Board of Selectmen. Marty O'Toole resigned from the seat, so it's a special election being held on September 16th, and this is a conversation. For those of you that are used to listening to all the forums that we do, a little bit different, a little bit shorter, a little bit more casual, but still hitting on the important issues. And I know that I can count on you, Kevin, to ask some of the questions with me. Now, one of the same things that we're going to be doing, we're going to give the candidates opening and closing statements. We're going to hold those to about a minute. But again, I don't have the bell here tonight. I'm not going to ring anybody or ding, none of that. But we're just going to have a conversation about what the issues are in town. Okay.
You got it.
All right. So let's start tonight, and let's start with Keith. Is it Wallow? I want to make sure I pronounce your name.
Wallow is correct.
Okay, Keith Wallow, running for selectman in the town of Scituate. Tell us a little bit about yourself. Yeah, go right ahead.
I would like to thank WATD for inviting me here today for my views on our town's issues. I own a local company, Harbor Mooring. My company maintains and builds docks and moorings in and around Scituate. In my prior career, I was responsible for $30+ million budget and managed 50+ managers. I mention this because I was responsible for managing others' money and ensuring it was spent correctly and prudently. There was no overspending as the clients I dealt with held us to stringent budgets. I look forward to managing your tax dollars as carefully as I managed my clients' dollars in the past. I mentioned some hard truths in our last forum. Sometimes hard truths come across as negative, but they need to be dealt with. The morale of our employees and citizens and the lack of transparency need immediate improvement. I see this as a major opportunity and look forward to improving these issues for our town. We have many major issues facing Scituate at this time. We need to have a complete plan to manage them all. We should not be picking one issue at a time, as many of these issues affect each other. We must move ahead with a tangible plan and ensure we are encompassing everything.
Thank you very much. That was the opening statement. Keith Wallow, you did that in a minute. Good. You've been practicing that with a timer.
I did. Thank you.
Karen Canfield, thank you so much for joining us tonight. Let's hear a little bit about you.
Thank you, Christine, and thank you, WATD, for this opportunity to talk about our important election. I'm excited to have a chance for your listeners to learn a bit more about their choice on September 16th. This election isn't just about one seat on the board. It's about what kind of leadership our residents want for our wonderful community. I have demonstrated my leadership by getting our new library built on budget and with unbelievable resident support. This required extensive community outreach, financial skill, and strong consensus building work. We live in a terrific community. Together, we can improve our planning efforts, ensure community engagement, and provide needed services. Please join Team Canfield. Together, we can make Scituate stronger.
Thank you very much. That was Karen Canfield. She is the other candidate running for the Board of Selectmen in Scituate. Now, you obviously both have a lot of interest in the town. You want to do good things. You want to make changes. Keith, when you gave your opening statement, you talked about some changes need to be made. Let's start with you, talk a little bit, and then I'm going to go right to you, Karen.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me the three things that need to change about town government in Scituate.
I think morale overall at the town hall is one of the big issues that needs to be improved drastically because of what's been happening with the current administration and the current Board of Selectmen. Transparency is huge. Sometimes the closed meetings and the stuff that happens behind closed doors should probably be public, and right now it isn't being viewed in public eyes. And I guess lastly, I would say we as a town can't keep passing overrides or knocking down buildings like the library until we know how we're going to pay for it. And just going back and saying we're going to have an override and we're going to make the taxpayers pay for it, I don't think is the way to go.
Okay. Karen, what do you think needs to change in Scituate town government? Do you think everything's fine as it is?
No, I think there's always room for improvement when you're talking about a municipal organization. I think for Scituate, improving, the first thing we need to do is to hire the strongest town administrator we can. We are in the search right now, and that is priority number one for our town. Touches everything in the town. The second thing is we have over 150 volunteers who work on boards and committees to improve things in the town. A lot of times, those committees work in silos. They do their hard work, but that information doesn't necessarily get transferred in a timely way to other boards that may need their opinion. So I think that that's one of my strengths, is figuring out a way so that those communication channels can open up, and it will only improve how we make decisions and how we govern the town.
Okay, Kevin Tachi, you want to jump in here?
Yeah, I certainly do want to jump in here. My question is, where do you guys stand in regards to experience, municipal experience? Share what boards, committees that you've been a part of, some of the things that you've done, and then I got a follow-up question to that. We'll start with Karen.
Thanks. I am in my third term as a library trustee, which means I've been elected by the town three times to represent the community. I've also been appointed by the Board of Selectmen to the Public Building Commission as the library rep to oversee our recently renovated and expanded library. And prior to that, I served on a number of community boards.
Keith, same question for you, if you wouldn't mind.
Yep. I'm on my third term also with Waterways, which is an appointed commission by the town. Before that, I haven't been on any other committees or boards, but for the prior 2 years, I think I've been to about 150,000 meetings in the town and have seen pretty much everything that happens in all of the different boards and committees.
What do you feel are some of the important attributes, Karen? You had mentioned in regards to hiring a new town administrator, and that's in ongoing process. Mm-hmm. What do you feel are some of the attributes that the new town administrator should possess, whether it's some of what the former Patricia Vincasey, and maybe something that maybe Patricia may not have had, but is kind of important moving forward, whoever the next TA is?
Yes.
That's a great question. The most important aspect is someone who has a firm command of municipal finance and management. That's the core of that job. But very important, and important because of some recent conflicts in the town, we need somebody that can effectively lead and support all of the wonderful employees we have in town so that they can do the best work they can do.
Keith, same question.
Well, I think the finances are ultimately important. We do have Nancy Holt, our town financer, who does a great job, and I think she'll be able to carry on some of the stuff that's been going on. I believe the town administrator really needs to work, he or she needs to work on total transparency for themselves and the Board of Selectmen. They need to work on morale for the town because the town employees are pretty low right now. And lastly, they just need to bring everything back together. And I think as a town, we have huge resources, and we need to get those people all back together doing the same thing instead of not being able to do so.
Okay, I want to ask a follow-up because this has been this is kind of a complicated issue, and I hope we can get right down to the nitty-gritty. With the town hiring a new town administrator soon, with Patricia Vincasey leaving, even though she was a town administrator, it seems her authority presented more as a town manager. Why don't they just call the post that? Who's in charge in the town of Scituate? That's been very unclear to me as a reporter during her reign there. Who's in charge? Who reports to whom? And who decide who speaks to the press? Because that has been a constant problem. So let's just speak very clearly
and
very
plainly.
Let's put it right on the table. And that was a problem with the former town administrator in Scituate as well. Very hot and cold, very erratic. Can the police speak? Can the fire speak? Who's allowed to speak? Is she a town? Who's in charge? Are the selectmen in charge? Or is she in charge? Keith?
She is definitely in charge. No one is allowed to speak except for her. We've had some issues in the past where things have happened and the department's heads have not had an opportunity to speak until they spoke to her first. So she is definitely in charge. The Board of Selectmen pretty much do whatever she asks them to do. And I'll back that up by just saying that in the last 2 years when I've been going to meetings, I believe there's been two times that I've been at meetings that the vote wasn't 5-0.
Okay. Do the selectmen report to her, or does she report to them?
She reports to them, but that's not how it currently seems to be working.
Okay, so they should be able to speak without talking to her first. That's what I'm not clear on, who's taking authority, if they have it or they don't have it. That's just never been made clear to me.
They have the authority, but it's not working that way right now.
Okay. What are your thoughts on the same issue, Karen?
Yeah, no, I feel the situation pretty astutely because having worked at the library and wanting to inform people about what's going on when we were going through that process, it's town money, and I very strongly felt we should be out there in front of it. The way it's structured, our town charter, the Board of Selectmen have the hiring authority to the town administrator. The town administrator has very far-reaching authority. Mm-hmm.
to the extent that she exercised that, I think she went to the full extent of what she was allowed to do. That's one of the reasons I think it's time, way past time, for us to think about revising our town charter, or at least starting the process, because maybe that's not the right structure. The Board of Selectmen, what was the other part of the question?
Who reports to who? Because it's been very unclear whether she calls the shots or they call the shots.
So it's, technically, as Keith said, the Board of Selectmen are the boss of the town administrator. However, they're volunteer positions and they've relied heavily on her expertise.
Okay.
During her first 5 or 6 years, she really got our financial house in order. And I think she gained a lot of confidence. And the last few years, I think maybe we've let the pendulum swing a little too far. As far as communications, the town administrator had made some decisions which he thought were in the best interest of the town regarding what people could talk to people to reporters about. A lot of the contracts actually have some limitations in them as regards to social media, but it is not in the best interest of the town not to have department heads be able to speak to people who have a legitimate reason to know what's going on.
Do you agree with that, Keith?
Which part?
About it's not in the best interest of the town to not be able to have department heads that can speak without getting permission from the town administrator.
Well, I think the department heads need to be able to speak and they be able to do their job, and as of right now, they're not not allowed to do so.
Okay.
So Kevin? If I could ask, if you're a candidate who's elected on September 16th, what do you plan to do in regards to whoever the new person is? Are you going to assert yourself as a selectman? Will you create a changed environment as to what we're hearing in regards to it? Will you have any input in regards to this moving forward? Karen?
Well, we absolutely have an opportunity with the hiring of a new TA. As a member, if I'm elected to the Board of Selectmen, you absolutely have the right to direct the new town administrator in things that reflect the community's values and priorities. So I absolutely feel that that's something that needs to change, and we'll be vocal about it. It's one of five people, but I believe, as I said in my opening statement, it's about leadership and experience, and I have those things.
Same question to you, Keith.
I hope everyone knows that they've kind of changed the structure in which they're deciding on who's going to be brought in front of us to be the TA. They've brought it down to a committee of three, which consists of two current selectmen and a former town administrator from another town, who happens to be a friend of Patricia's. So there's many people out there that aren't real happy with this situation and how it's being done. So I think it comes down to transparency, and we need to make sure that it is a transparent procedure, and I'm not sure it's going to be.
Karen?
Keith's right. There is a pre-screening committee made up of these three people that was set up to, because sometimes people don't want their communities knowing that they're applying to look for another job. Mm-hmm. So that body is charged with getting a short list of candidates. All of those candidates will come before the full board in public to be interviewed, is the process that they're going to follow. So, they'll be setting it up just like, we do for boards and committees, and those individuals will be brought in and interviewed in public.
Okay.
I can't believe we're halfway through this conversation already, and we haven't even talked about coastal issues. Anytime there's a big storm rolling in, usually half of the Boston media is set up in Situate.
Exactly.
What are your concerns? And we're guilty too. We're up there somewhere too. What are your concerns in regards to coastal issues when it comes to infrastructure and taking care of Situate, when it comes to Mother Nature and any developments that are on the beach?
Well, obviously, the coastal, our coast is our greatest asset and our greatest resource. So protecting it is a huge priority. We are very fortunate in Situate. We have a coastal resources officer, I believe the only one in the Commonwealth. And her job is to make sure that the research is there and the structures in place that we are in a position to apply for grants for all of the different foreshore protection things that we can do.
Okay, Keith,
same question.
I think we have some great opportunities in front of us right now. There's a system called WADS, which is Wave Insinuating Devices. I believe it's and we have an opportunity to be the test site in the Northeast to make this happen. What it does is it breaks the waves before they get to the shore, which makes the impact on the shore much less than what it would be right now. And I think we need to take it. It's working down in Virginia, and there's some other sites down further south that it's not only saving the shore, but it's re-nourishing the beaches, which is something we pay for, because as the waves come in, they pull the sand out. And with these wads in place, the sand is actually left there, and actually the sand grows. So it actually makes the re-nourishing of beaches not necessary. So that $5 or $10 or $15 million we spend over the next few years may not be necessary.
So it's going to help with erosion and also collect any of the sand that may get washed into the sea.
Correct. And if right now I've spoken to some people, and we can get a 1,000-foot wad set up as a trial area up here in the Northeast for $1 million. And there's a good chance we can get Army Corps to pay for it from the people I've spoken to, because they want to know if they're going to work up here or not.
Okay.
So I think it's a great opportunity.
Okay, let me switch my gears here for a minute. How is the average taxpayer in Scituate benefited from the wind turbine? Specific monetary payment, number one. And number two, the people who, a lot of whom supported it in the beginning, and then when it was put up, had some problems with noise in their neighborhood, flicker, et cetera. How do you think the town treated those people? Start with you, Keith.
Well, again, I'm the people's voice that keeps going back to morale. And again, when I opened my statement, I said it was not just the employees, it was the citizens. We have a gentleman that's come in for the last 3 weeks at selectmen's meetings and said, I can't sleep at night because of this thing, and you're not helping me. So their answer back to him was, we're going to do some more studies and we'll let you know. So in my opinion, the current board does not listen enough, and they just don't seem to react to what the people's needs are. And I'd like to see that changed.
Okay. What do you think, Karen? Same question.
I know. I felt for that guy. I wanted to say, okay, I'm going to come over and see what it's like in the middle of the night, because he's definitely feeling for it. I don't have the exact figures, but I believe the town brings in it's a substantial amount of income mm-hmm. from that property, from the turbine. You know, that's nothing to sneeze at, because every dollar goes to something important in our town. How you treat residents is what it's all about. We serve to represent people that live in the town and pay those taxes. So I agree that, when it comes to that, when there's a real and present, they did restrict the use of that tower mm-hmm. so that to try to diminish the impact on people. And I think that we need to look at it as closely as possible, because, if somebody can't sleep, that's not
right.
fair, no matter how much money we're getting.
I know they kept talking about the money, but does anybody know exactly how much it is? I mean, does every taxpayer get like a $10 check or something?
That money goes into the general fund and helps offset other issues. And I wish I have it in my head, and I don't want to state it because I think I have it wrong.
Did you want to add something to that, Keith?
I guess I'll state it in my head. I think it's around $1 million a year is the number that we get out of it.
I couldn't remember how many zeros there were.
And it doesn't go back into the taxpayers. But I also wanted to say, I'm behind putting another one in, or two more in,
mm-hmm.
because it does help. It helps the general fund, and it does help the town. We just have to be really careful, and we have to make sure that we study it a little closer than mm-hmm. we studied this one if we do another one.
Okay. Kevin?
Just want to remind folks that they are listening to Monday Night Talk here on 959 WATD, 1460 AM in Brockton, as we are speaking with the two candidates running for selectmen in Scituate, Karen Canfield and Keith Wallow. Special election coming up on September 16th. It's a Saturday, if I'm correct, right, Christine?
Mm-hmm.
And I want to ask you guys, and that is, Christine and I have kind of touched upon in the brief time that we're here a couple of the key issues. But is there an issue that we haven't mentioned yet, but you feel is important, and that you're hearing from residents about, that they're saying to you, hey, this is something that if you get on that board, it's something that you have a conversation with the other four selectmen? We'll start with Keith.
There's so many, I could go on for an hour and a half there.
Pick a favorite then. Pick something that you hear a lot of on a regular basis.
Don't worry, because I'm going to ask you about the senior center next.
Yeah.
It might be brown water. I mean, we're known for our brown water, and it's
popular brown water.
Yeah, it's pretty bad,
yes.
And it needs to be addressed. And we've done a lot of the replacing of the pipes right now, and there's some more to do. I think there's 110 miles of water pipes in the town of Scituate, and we have a few left to do, but not a majority. So a lot of these problems should be starting to settle out, but they're not. So I think we really need to investigate and figure out why that's not happening. But I think that's one of the biggest ones.
Karen?
Yeah, it's an interesting thing. So if you ask at the corner store, people are going to say brown water, mm-hmm. the roads are a mess, and the communication issue between town hall and people. Those are what people talk about. And they also talk about the cell service, but unfortunately the Board of Selectmen
or non-existent
right.
cell service.
We really don't have that much sway on that issue. And it's tricky because those are important things that people care about. To get to those solutions requires taking a step back and looking at how those things have become an issue and fixing them, through town government. And those are complicated. Most of them, as Keith mentioned with the water, it's not as simple as putting clean water in the pipes. You got a lot of work to do. With the bad roads, you got to look at, the impact of that. And I also am very concerned that we need, besides the charter review, we need to spend a lot of time looking at our planning and zoning, because I don't think we're planning appropriately for growth.
Just a quick follow-up. Yeah. So any questions in regard to Chapter 90 monies and how it's being spent for roads and how they're being repaired? Do you have questions, and are you going to ask those questions, Karen?
Absolutely. I mean, it's a real thing. Every day somebody stops and says, I can't drive my truck down this road. It's, it's bad for my business and that. So, yeah, it's the DPW needs to, honestly, one of the first things I'll do is ask our very hardworking DPW to just show me the plan, because I haven't seen that yet.
Keith?
Well, the roads are dug up for a reason, whether we're replacing sewer pipes or water mm-hmm. pipes. And I actually mentioned this the other night, that there's a new way to do the roads. There's a reason the roads stay like that. Mm-hmm. You have to put the pipes in, you have to fill them in with sand, and then you pave over them, and you have to wait a year for it to settle before you can pave the road entirely. Mm-hmm. Well, there's a new system out there right now where you can use clay instead of sand, and it doesn't have to settle. So you can pave the roads as soon as you're done doing a project. So that whole 1 year waiting time of people saying, oh my God, the roads are so mm-hmm. horrible, it's been a year, what are you doing, could be going away.
We get enough time for your senior center question.
Yes, the senior center
before
question.
We wrap.
And
yep.
another real quick follow up.
Yep.
My senior center question is not just one question. One of three possible locations, which one do you support for new senior center, and where and what is the purple dinosaur? That's number one. They keep saying that like everybody knows where this Barney character is. Why has it taken so long to get to this point with a new senior center when there's clearly a need for one? And do you think it's been a priority or even a concern for the current board, Keith?
Purple Dinosaur is a little park that's probably not a real good site. I'm not sure even why they put it on there. It's like a playground, and it has a small field in the back
okay.
of it.
Like a big Barney thing there or something?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, it could be.
Okay.
I do think it's a priority, and I think the selectmen have thought it was a priority.
Okay.
But I think that they felt that the safety complex and the school were higher priorities at the time, and that's probably one of the reasons it didn't go in.
Okay.
We could talk for a couple hours about the safety complex and the school and yeah. what happened with those projects.
Do you support a new senior center?
I do support
Which
a new
location?
Senior center. If I had to pick one, I would pick the one behind the library.
Okay. What about you, Karen? You support a new senior center? Which location?
I do support a new senior center, and I would like to see it one of the locations in the town common area, so okay. whether it's the library or Gates.
Okay, one more quick lightning round question here. The Marine Unit with the Scituate Police Department, getting a lot of good reviews. Do you support the police expansion with the boat they have out there, checking on what's going on in the spit there? Karen?
I do. Okay. I think that it was brought in for good reasons,
okay.
And hopefully it improves safety for everyone.
Keith, you think it's a good idea to have that out there?
Not 100% sure it's necessary. I'm on the water out there every day, and it's nice to have it, but a lot of the times when there's an issue and there's something happening on a boat out there, by the time one of the, whether it's the police get there first or the harbor master gets there first, it's usually within 10 seconds of each other.
Okay.
So I'm not 100% sure it's money well spent.
Okay.
Well, we got enough time in the segment
okay.
for them to close out
and
give the folks information about the election.
Okay, let's start with you, Keith, the minute.
Thank you for listening to my views, and I look forward to speaking with many of you in the weeks leading up to our election. Your voice is very important to all that happens in our town, and it will be heard through me. All issues need to be looked at from all sides, and mutual compromise that makes sense for all should be our objectives. This is one of my strengths, and I look forward to using it to better our town. Concerns such as brown water, water supply, foreshore protection, sewer plant and new installs, building development, ADA regulations, ambulance staffing, ball fields, and growing our retail segment are important items to our town's future. They all need to be addressed prudently and swiftly. I have outlined plans for many of these issues with details on how to achieve them and do so at the lowest possible cost. We have great people at our town hall and on our committees that will help us be very successful. I would be honored to receive your vote on September 16th and look forward to being the people's voice in Scituate. Thank you.
Thank you, Keith Weller. That was your final comment. We've got one now from you, Karen Canfield.
Thank you again for your opportunity to discuss these important issues today and about our upcoming special election. I encourage everyone listening to check out the YouTube video of Keith and I at our recent candidates forum, which has a lot of in-depth conversation. And also, I'd love you to check out my website and see more about me. There are so many wonderful aspects to our town, and our Board of Selectmen must respect our community, protect our resources, and steward our future. I hope you'll consider voting for me on September 16th.
Thank you very much, Karen Canfield. Two good candidates here tonight. You just heard Karen Canfield, Keith Wallow, Kevin Tachi. This was a conversation, not a forum. I like this. September 16th, a Saturday, is it 7 to 6, I believe? Polls are open at the high school.
Correct.
And I'm going to say the same thing I say when we do every single forum. Get out there. If you don't vote, you don't have a voice. This whole forum will be up on our website. It'll be on Kevin's podcast, and you'll hear selected cuts during tomorrow morning, Tuesday morning's drive. I'm Christine James. Hey, thank you, Kevin Tachi, for letting me hijack some of your time here.
Sure. We're going to go from dancing with the candidates to dancing with dignitaries coming up in our next segment here on Monday Night Talk. Kathy D., you know her from the afternoon drive show here, the Kathy D. Show, and her crossover with Christine. Well, she's going to be joining me. We're going to speak with Rob Hakala, Sandra Wright, and Cheryl Bartlett about this fantastic event coming up on September 16th. Stay tuned. You're listening to Monday Night Talk. Don't go anywhere.
Now, this is the music we tighten up with. First, we tighten up on the drum. All right, now, drum. I want you to tighten up one time.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
McGuigan's Pub in downtown Whitman is a great place to unwind any night of the week. Stop in for Singo on Monday night. There's the always popular Irish Sessions every Tuesday night, half-price pizza every Wednesday night, and Friday and Saturday nights feature the best in live entertainment. Catch your favorite game on McGuigan's 8 big flat screens and enjoy a pint at their beautiful 54-foot mahogany bar. Whether you're a regular or coming in for the first time, you're always a friend of McGuigan's Pub, 546 Washington Street, Whitman Center.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome opening day. Pembroke Titans softball.
Okay, Addie, you got this. Just relax.
I know, Dad.
First batter coming to the plate.
I know, Hattie, but just keep your eye on the ball. Just keep your eye on the ball.
Dad, relax. I do got this.
I know, Hattie. Remember, don't swing at the first pitch.
Daddy!
And here's the pitch. That is a fair... In fact, that's a home run!
Sorry about your windshield, Dad.
Are you kidding me? That was awesome. I'm keeping the inspection sticker for a souvenir.
Windshield broken by a home run? Call Tiny first, 1-888-64-TINYS.
That's my Hattie.
Welcome back to Monday Night Talk. Don't just listen, say something. Call 781-837-4900. And now, more Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
We're back with the final portion of Monday Night Talk, and this is the second part of kind of a all-star WATD cast, as you heard prior to this segment, WATD news director, news manager, Christine James, as we got done speaking with the two candidates running for selectmen at Scituate, Karen Canfield and Keith Wallow. Now, as though I wasn't blessed to have Christine James be part of a segment, I got the two titans, the two bookends, the cornerstones of WATD. We'll start with my co-producer of this segment. And actually, her and Christine are kind of, I can blame them as to being inspired to doing this. Because one thing that I'm a fan of on this station, other than the morning show, is the afternoon drive slot with WATD's Kathy D. She's going to be kind of my co-host. She's also a dancing aficionado. She's half of the Dancing with the Stars conversation that you hear in the afternoons between 2 and 6. Technically, at the crossover between the 4 and 5 o'clock news, coming out of news into back into Kathy's show. Kathy, thank you for joining me for this segment.
All right, I'd just like to, in the interest of full disclosure, I have never taken a dance lesson in my life. Never, ever, ever. And anytime I danced during junior high, people asked me to stop. So I'm just saying, this is where I'm coming from.
And see, we're kindred spirits because, like Rob, when I was talking to Rob, he's like, Kevin, you know, I would like to, you know, and I'm talking about Rob Hackler, who is, he's one of the individuals who's also part of this, Rob. Is the executive producer of the South Shore's Morning News, teamed up with Lisa Azizi. You can hear here on the station, 5 a.m. to 10 a.m., not only on 95.9 FM, but 1460 a.m. now in Brockton. And so Rob asked me, would you show me a few things? I said, Rob, the one thing that I'm great at, I can move like from my belly up. I move well, but when I try to add my feet into it, it's ugly.
It's kind of like swimming. You got to breathe or swim, but I can't do both.
Yeah.
I understand it completely.
Yeah, and so I've had many people who have seen, it's the movie, if anybody has seen the movie Hitch, where Will Smith is trying to show Kevin James how to be able to be smooth and do a dancing. You know, this right here, this is how you do it. And he does this crazy, that's me.
Mm-hmm.
And people are like, listen, go sit down.
Understood. I get it. I totally get it. I understand.
So I'm honored that we can at least, you and I can at least be able to tackle this fantastic event that is coming up September 16th. We have Dancing with the Dignitaries. This has been promoted a couple of different times here on the station. I thought I would take an opportunity to do something, do an expanded, a 50,000 foot view of it. And use our cornerstones here at WATD. Is that fair?
I'm down with it.
I'm happy.
I'm fine.
And I thank you for the opportunity, Kevin. I think the more promotion, the better for such a serious organization and a wonderful cause, and it's going to be a great night.
And then we also get to answer, Kathy, we get to answer the questions that you and Christine have in regards to where Rob is at this particular time. And we also get to speak with a couple of other contestants. We have on the phone line joining us now, right? We have Cheryl Bartlett, a former commissioner of the Mass Department of Public Health. Cheryl, welcome to Monday Night Talk.
Hi, how are you this evening?
We're doing pretty good. And we also have in studio Sandra Wright, who is a Plymouth County Commissioner herself. Sandra?
Yes, thank you very much for having me here, and I'm excited about it.
And so I have to ask, how did you guys get asked? We'll start with Cheryl and work our way around the room. How did you guys get approached to do this? Are you a repeat offender? Is this your first time, Cheryl?
This is my first time. I was actually at an event for the Plymouth Coalition for the Homeless and with former Senate President Therese Murray, who they were cornering to do this. And she turned around and said, Cheryl, we'll do it. She's the former commissioner. Get her. And so I had a moment of fun, and I jumped in.
Sandra, how did you get involved?
Well, I got a phone call one morning and kind of surprised at, you know, who was calling me and for what reason. A little leery about why they were calling me. I always thought I wanted to dance with John Travolta, but after I got my feet in motion, I decided I could never do that. But, yeah, I got a phone call, and I said I had to think about it, and then I got another phone call, and so I decided to do it, jump in. It's for a great cause.
Yeah.
Robert?
Well, I also got a phone call here at the radio station, and I'm not sure if Kathy had anything to do with giving this man my number.
Would I do that?
I don't know. But
here,
I had this.
Let's make it official, though, Rob. Hang on. And there we go. Oh. And one, and two, and one, and two. Ball change. There we go. Boom.
Ah, see, he's got the moves.
This is, by the way, this is not the dance that he will be doing.
This is
a cha-cha.
I did a foxtrot. Uh-huh. So I had this this man with this wonderful voice who I found out his name is Jim Greer. He leaves this message saying, would you like to take part in this event, this dancing to help out? Again, this is the Plymouth County Suicide Prevention Coalition. And then I find out this is the first time they're doing a dancing tournament. Normally, they've done in the past, they told us the story, they do a bowling event. See, we missed out on that. So if anyone here bowls a good game, I missed out on that.
It depends. Now, is it candle pin? I'm pretty good at that.
or
is it 10 pin, which I'm kind of ugly at.
I think I'd be worse at that than dancing.
So you know, but I said, again, it was for a good cause, just like you guys have all said before. And now that I think about this, I've never met Jim Greer. I don't know how he assembled all of us that have never been so great at dancing together, but here we all are.
Well, I can see why, because, again, you're going to implement dancing, right? You're gonna have lessons, right? Is that what's
yes,
happening?
Yes, we get 10
right.
lessons.
Yeah, no, I'm just kidding. Yeah, we've had a few lessons so far.
You've had a few.
I'm up out to five in.
So you're halfway through.
Yeah, halfway through.
I think I'm up to seven and probably need about eight more.
Really? And Cheryl, you said how many have you done so far?
I've done about five, but I agree I could probably use a lot more. I'm doing the tango, which is not the easiest.
Oh.
Now, when do they implement the rose? Don't you have to dance with a rose in your teeth?
For the tango.
That's the least of her worries.
Yeah. Presentation.
Whoa.
We're going to win, so we're working hard.
Now, I'm sitting here, I'm hogging a lot of the conversation. I'm gonna turn things over to Kathy just for a half a second, but I also want to make sure that I put this in proper perspective, because this is actually going to be done for a great cause, the Plymouth County Suicide Prevention Coalition. And they're actually teaming up with the Fred Astaire Dance Studio of Plymouth for a fundraiser that's going to be on September 16th. That's why it's being called Dancing with the Dignitaries, a night of food, fun, and great dancing as they attempt to raise money to promote suicide prevention, intervention, and awareness in our communities and schools throughout Plymouth County. Kathy, did you have a question or anything that you wanted to kind of throw out there?
Well, first I would like to ask Rob how he feels about sequins, because I feel that the addition of sequins just brings the performance up so much more.
Yeah, you, I have heard Christine and you talk quite a bit extensively, spending a lot of the time on outfits sequins. And we haven't even gotten to that part of the discussion. I don't even know what I'm wearing. The shoes are not in yet because shoes that are a weird size,
size
14 shoes. So I'm waiting for them to arrive.
That's NBA stuff.
So I don't know, but I mean, I'm happy to take any advice. This is, again, first time.
Yeah.
You know, I'm still trying to get the routine down and memorized and
well,
to stop looking at my feet.
If they can't find an appropriate, for lack of a better word, I'll say costume. If they can't find one with sequins that Christine and I say that we have a bedazzler, and we would be happy to help you out. So don't fret about that. The costume, don't worry about that. We'll handle that if need be. So
don't forget, we did the peep thing for the library, we are very artistic here at the radio station.
We
could design something for you.
No, I've seen what you worked on. No, believe me, I understand that. No, the sequins are great. And by the way, for the record, I will not be wearing the khaki pants that I wear every day around the radio station. I will not be wearing those. So I can tell you that.
We were ready to bedazzle those if need be.
I know. I heard that, but I've got some strong competition here, because I can tell Cheryl is a strong competitor, and also Sandra as well. I can tell they're in it to win it.
Got it.
Well, I'm a little concerned, because I'm not sure if I'm going to be wearing 4-inch heels, because I don't do well on heels, but and dancing will be a challenge, I'm sure. I am doing the swing, which I'm excited about.
Okay.
Wow. So, Cheryl is going to be wearing Doc Martens with her lovely dress, as I understand it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Got to be comfortable if you're going to perform. That's the truth. Hey, and you know what else we have to mention, too, is our own Nicole Perry is competing in this as well from WATD's Powerful Women Revealed. And she's a dynamo. She really is. So she'll be competing as well.
Yeah, so basically they have three women and three men, the six of us that they have gathered together. Mm. And they're pairing us up with the professionals at the Fred Astaire Dance Studio of Plymouth. And they've been wonderful, by the way, to work. I walk in there and I feel like, you know, if you're at like 80 or 100%, they're all at 150. They're like, you ready to dance? And they, you know, I come in there and I'm like, okay, I'm ready to go. And they really have been amazing and so gracious, and they make me feel so comfortable. So I've been enjoying my experience there.
And if I may, folks, I just want to, thank you very much, Kathy, for mentioning Nicole Perry, who is indeed a dynamo and does a fantastic job. You can be heard Sundays after the noon news that we have here at WATD. But we also have State Rep from Plymouth, Matt Muratori, Bill Tilden, Athletic Director of the Old Rochester Regional School District. Before us here now, we have Cheryl Bartlett and Sandra Wright and Rob Hakala. Is there a trophy?
Ooh.
Is there a trophy?
Ooh.
And if not, has anybody designed it? Because that also could lead to our talent here at the radio station to create something for that.
We got that clay over at Michael's, the craft store. We could probably whip something up there, too, if we need to. Anything, a plaque. we'll figure it out. Don't worry. These are the small potato parts of the whole
thing. These are. And I also want to mention that I think it's fantastic, as to some of the other folks who are participating in this. You got a professional, Christine Harvey.
Oh,
who
yes.
is a judge, and she's from the Fred Astaire Dance Studio. Tim Cruz, Plymouth County District Attorney, and
yes.
Joseph McDonald, Jr.
Top
Plymouth
judges.
County Sheriff.
Top judges.
I wonder if they've ever done any of these dances.
That's very interesting.
I've seen Tim Cruz dance around a courtroom.
Have you really? And let's not forget the Master of Ceremonies for that night, State Representative Tom Coulter, a fantastic speaker.
Yes.
And it's all for a great cause, and I want to tap into your many years with a nursing background, Cheryl, and I know that you're short on time, so I'll let you answer this before we let you go. Give me your thoughts in regards to trying to do all that we can when it comes to suicide prevention and getting word out there to folks who are in need.
Yes, well, I have in many different capacities been involved with the suicide issue. I was on Nantucket for many years, and we had a year where we experienced at least six deaths of high school students from suicide, which was when I really began to dive into this subject. And over time, my roles at the Department of Public Health oversaw the statewide suicide prevention coalition and the work that we do. And it seems like more and more we are seeing this particular issue increase, and we really need to get this education and awareness out. So I'm really happy to be part of something that's focused on this particular important public health issue.
Now, my understanding is some of the programs that are funded include, but aren't limited to, is the ASSIST, or the acronym for Applied Suicide Intervention Skills Training.
Yes.
Mental Health First Aid, Talk Saves Lives, and Safe Talk. I would think those are like hotlines.
Yes, they are definitely ways for people to be aware when they're interacting with people for signs of someone having some stress or anxiety or maybe an exacerbation of a mental health condition, and to try to intervene before it's too late.
Well, we're gonna let you go, but we're going to look forward to checking in with you just a couple of nights before the big dance-off, as you're going to be joined with State Rep Matt Muratori. We'll find out where he's at in the process. I've got my moles out there who say that...
He had his first lesson last night. I was checking him out.
Okay, yeah, because, you know, I went into the dance studio and they had like one of those milk cartons that said, have you seen this man? He was missing, and I know he's kind of doing most of his lessons. He's going to kind of stack them all up. But okay, so one down from Matt Muratori.
Very good.
Cheryl, we'll look forward to talking to you in 2 weeks and getting a final tally as to where you're standing with your moves.
I'm practicing. I'll talk to you on the 11th.
And if we can give her some music to lead her out of the room.
There you go.
Of a woman is my song.
There we go.
All right.
I'm trying to do my best Christine James, but of course.
All right. Take care now.
You got it. There she is.
Now, sitting here with you, Kevin, and watching those moves there, I think you're quite the swinger.
They're horrible. Horrible.
Oh, come on.
Yeah.
And I want to thank Cheryl Bartlett for joining us and being a part of the segment and chatting it up. And again, we'll look forward to talking with her. You are listening to Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD on the FM side, of course, on the AM side, 1460 AM in Brockton. Of course, I have here before me Rob Hackler. You know him from the South Shore's Morning News. Executive producer, host, and of course, Sandra Wright, Plymouth County Commissioner, and my co-producer, and I call her my co-judge because we're kind of judging you guys as to where you guys are at this particular time.
Uh-oh,
she's kind of like the co-host, Kathy
B. Sitting here.
Our afternoon drive host.
Should I get up from the table and go a few steps for you?
Yeah. Well, it's funny you say that because we may, after we get done with the segment, Kathy and I may, and I think maybe Christine's still here somewhere. Mm-hmm. You kind of see and how you guys do it. Now, do they have steps on the floor? I was kind of wondering if they had something like that,
no.
Or is it strictly
your... Someone asked me that question, too. You're not the first person to ask that. And no, my only problem is I'm looking a lot at my feet as I'm trying to memorize where they're supposed to be at a certain time in the routine that I'm learning. But no, I've been out just on the dance floor with other people taking lessons and trying not to bump into them.
Hey, let me ask you this. Is your favorite part the full floor-to-ceiling mirrors? Don't you love that part?
Oh, no, I don't.
No, I don't. It's just as I avoid restaurants with mirrors. I don't really like the mirrors, but they are unavoidable.
Yeah.
Right,
yeah,
right. Yeah. No, I think, you know, for myself, the Brandon, who is my instructor, he's done a great job. He took me with no experience at all and, you know, has formed me into what he wants me to be and mm-hmm. how he wants me to move. And I think he's had a lot of patience. He's done a great job. And I just love going there to see him.
Brandon's about 7 feet tall.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
He's right in proportion with you.
Yeah, yeah, right.
Yeah.
Pretty tall, though.
Man. I'm 5'3", you know.
Yeah. Hey, well, can I just mention that our website, 959watd.com, on the homepage is the icon for this Dancing with the Dignitaries. And if you click on that, you'll see a picture, actually, of Rob Hackler in action, in motion, as it were. Yeah.
Yeah, what's going on there? Because it was a conversation with Kathy and Christine.
Well,
and
I said it looks like you're wrestling with her.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
That doesn't sound good.
Best 2 out of 3 falls. That was it.
Was that a practice dip? What was that?
That was a dip. That was a dip,
yeah,
wasn't it?
It was she was showing me how it would be before I actually do my part. She was just kind of falling, you know, dipping, I guess, and I had to make sure she didn't go down on the floor.
Well, I think you won that one.
Yeah, so far so good. But again, I'm learning all the steps, and it's new to me. But yeah, I put the photo up there so people can see it.
But here's the thing. How seriously are you taking this? Because some people are competitive, right?
Oh, yeah.
Some people will take it beyond having
exactly.
go where they might be doing it at home. Maybe they're with their significant other or, you know, maybe they're looking in the mirror and they're trying to go, oh, it should look like this. Are you doing any of that or is it strictly when you show up at the dance studio, that's when you...
What you get is what you get. No, I'm...
Atta boy, Rob.
No, I want to do... A great job, knowing that I'll only have 10 or so lessons. But what I did, what I found helpful, and I don't know, Sandra, if you've done this or whatever, I had my dance partner and my instructor is Casey, and she and her husband own the studio in Plymouth. And so they danced out the dance together, and they allowed me to record it on my iPhone. So I can watch.
That's a great idea.
That's
yeah.
a great
so I've been
idea.
Watching that over and over and over again.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's a good way for me. For me, the best way is to see it and to memorize it. So I've been trying to write it out and get the pattern down.
Now, how is she proportionate to you? And what are you doing? Because when you're dancing with a partner, probably the one thing you want to be careful of, if you want to be able to continue dancing with them, is that you're not stepping on their feet.
Yeah, no.
How's that?
She said that might happen at the beginning, but not as much as you might think. And she's kind of looking out for me, and I think everybody knows that we're at this level, and they're very patient. But yeah, no, I mean, she's, you know, I think it's a good height, and, you know, I think it's coming along so far. So it's the Foxtrot. It'll be a Frank Sinatra number, so
hello,
I'm excited about
hello.
That.
Can you share the number? Do we have to wait?
Wow.
No, I don't think there's anything to say. So it's Fly Me to the Moon.
Oh,
oh yeah.
I love that song.
Yeah.
That's
so
wonderful.
That'll be great. So I'm looking
awesome.
Forward to... seeing what spring is like on Jupiter and Mars.
Hello. I love it. I love it. I just love that. That is so suave. Mm. You know, just
I think what they've done is actually, and maybe Sandra, you can say, they've, like Casey has kind of selected all these different dances, so everything's kind of a little different. There'll be different music. So it's really going to be a great show that night, and they want to really sell out the place. So it's going to be at Emerald Hall in Abington, and the date is, it's the 16th. Saturday.
September 16th,
yeah.
So it's 6 o'clock.
So get as many, you know, tickets and help out and raise some money, and they're going to have some raffles and other ways, too. Raise as much money.
And I think the dance is only for a minute.
Yeah.
It's not very long, but it seems a lot longer.
No, it seems a lot longer.
That's
no.
it, a minute?
A minute? Okay, yeah. No,
well,
saying,
I think it seems longer.
I have, Paul, I'm going to have to talk to the judges.
I think it's about
can we extend this to like 3 minutes?
A minute?
They said you're going to be out
minute
there for a minute.
And a half.
How long do you
Wait,
want
to is this American Idol or something? We only sing the first part of the song?
It
the
would
song
take me
was
that
edited.
Long to the get the high heels
edited.
On.
Right.
Come
yeah,
on.
They play, it's the edited version. There will be real dancers, too, throughout the evening as well.
Yes.
As opposed to?
As opposed to?
You guys are real dancers.
All right.
I think taking 10 lessons classifies you as a dancer, but...
You're almost pro.
You're almost pro.
Almost pro.
Almost.
Almost pro. Wow.
By the time we get done.
Is that going to compete with John Shea
show?
Yeah, sounds
like a name of a show. Okay. Almost pro.
By the time we get our 10 dance lessons, we will be pros.
Yes, we will. Yeah. Soon you'll be dancing with John Travolta.
That's right.
Just like you always wanted.
And again, the event Saturday, September 16th, 6 o'clock. Emerald Hall actually is located at 30 Central Street in Abington. Tickets are $35 if you want to be able to watch this extravaganza. $20 for those who are 18 and under. You actually can purchase the tickets at www.brownpapertickets.com. There's a /event/304-2596. Tickets for those who are under 18, you actually have to call, and you would call Jenny Babcock at 508-254-9320. So keep that in mind.
Now, Kevin, in addition to the dancing, which, you know, that's plenty, but is there some kind of refreshment, light refreshments, or anything like that during the course of the evening, or is it strictly dancing?
I got cocktail reception here, cash bar, raffle prizes.
There you go. Yeah.
Appetizers.
Apps. We got apps.
That's
That's why the dances are only a minute long, because we have to leave time for apps.
Maybe a minute and a half.
Apps and cocktails.
Yeah, it should be fun, and I think they want us to really get out there and try to get more people to vote for us. I think at some point we'll be going around the audience and trying to shake the crowd down for some money.
Now, wait a minute. Now, you're being judged, right? We've established
that.
We've
established that.
But you're also going to be able to get votes from the audience, or no?
I think we can get extra votes by getting extra dollars that night.
Okay.
So, you know, hopefully we'll see how that goes. I imagine Nicole Perry will probably pack the room, though, with all her friends. It'll be tough.
Oh, look out. Look out. That woman is a firecracker, I'll tell you right now. She is.
A networking
queen.
She
is a competitive networking queen.
Don't you have access to the prize closet here?
I do have the key.
Could that help, Kathy?
No. We have a couple of Olivia Newton-John records left, but that's about it. So you're on your own there, buddy.
Thank you.
You definitely are on your own. But that's interesting that you would have to go out and politic for these. And it's strictly...
Yeah.
Is there first, second, and third? I'm not sure how
it works. And remember, I'm not in politics, but I've got some politicians here that are used to raising money and getting out the vote.
And I think that, you know, they're going to be there just voting for who they is their favorite person dancing on the floor.
Yeah. Yeah, we shall see. It'll be fun. And I know, obviously, you know a lot, Sandra, when it comes to budgets, that every organization in the Plymouth County Suicide Prevention Coalition, it's tough. Everybody's trying to raise some money. We know it's important. So this will be a great cause.
Right. And just as we're ready to wrap up this segment, just a couple of moments here. Just a couple of quick notes. Did you know that suicide is the 10th leading cause of death in the United States? One person dies by suicide in Massachusetts every 14 hours. The Plymouth County Suicide Prevention Coalition is in their fourth year of serving community schools, local organizations, and businesses in Plymouth County, and also some in Norfolk County as well. The goal for this particular event and for the Plymouth County Suicide Prevention Coalition is to educate, raise awareness, and provide training for suicide prevention, intervention, and mental health awareness throughout all of our communities. So, and that's why it's great that this coalition is deciding to team up with the Fred Astaire Studio of Plymouth and the Emerald Hall of Abington to host this great fundraiser. We just have Just a couple of moments left here. Kathy, anything you want to kind of say in closing?
Well, I mean, we've been, you know, kidding around a lot and so forth, but I'll tell you something. This is a very serious, serious issue, and help is available. It has to be made available more so. The word has to get out. And I just give you guys all the credit in the world for putting yourself out there on the line, having some fun with it, but for an extremely good cause.
Yeah.
And I also want to make sure that I thank Kathy and Rob and Sandra and Cheryl for being a part of this special, unique segment to be able to kind of get the word out there. Rob, anything you want to say?
No, I'm just happy to help out. And as all of you have said before, this is an important cause. Mm-hmm. I didn't know as much about it until I first read more. And, you know, I know that there are some families that certainly have been affected by this. And I was surprised that it's such a high cause of death among young people, but it affects people of all ages and backgrounds and races. And as I think Jim Greer told us, this was kind of like the C word, cancer. He says we just need to talk about it more, have conversations, and that's what these things will help with.
Sandra?
Yeah, I think that this is something that has just exploded over the past few years. And, you know, unfortunately, it's a great cause, but, you know, a sad cause. And, you know, we really have to be more aware of our surroundings and, you know, who's struggling. And there's so many in this day. It's amazing. Yeah. So I'm glad to be a part of it. And it's a great cause. And I look forward to anything I can do for the suicide prevention.
Dancing with the Dignitaries. It's going to be a great night of fun. September 16th, 6 p.m. at the Emerald Hall, 30 Central Street in Abington. Again, don't forget tickets, $35. Don't forget to vote for Rob and for Sandra. Give them
Sandra.
Some love. And again, I want to thank both Kathy and Rob for doing double duty. Rob, of course, here early this morning and participating. Kathy coming off her shift not too long ago. I want to thank you both for being a part of this.
Oh, thank you. It was fun. And Mr. Hackle, I see you in the hallways practicing, everybody.
Thank you,
Kevin. We look forward to it. Hey, until next week at 6:15 p.m., have yourself a great night.
95.9 WATD-FM Marshfield and 95.9 WATD.com, the South Shore's news, weather, and traffic station.